Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am Jules Holland.
And I am Jim Moyer. Join us for Jules and Jim's Joyride.
Joyride. Yes, Joyride. Motoring memories.
Train travel trips.
Things on boats.
Air crashes.
Barrows and cycling moments.
Sex on the back seat of a Datsun. Our greatest racing carist. I wrote this, and I'm not quite sure about whether that's correct. Our greatest racing carist is driven so fast, Jules and I put together can't compete with his 100 miles per hour. Now, Damon, I think that's probably the best introduction you've ever had in your life.
Oh, by a long shot. It's a bit. I'm not sure I can accept the greatest racing carist title yet. I mean, there are a few other contenders.
Do you reckon?
Yes,
I'd stick with it.
I'd stick with it. If Jim's giving it to you, I'd just accept it. I mean, I suppose the thing is that you're one of the best loved, world champion, and one of the best loved as well. That's the other thing, you know.
I'll take that. I mean, I'm not sure how you quantify it, but I've always been well received, and I'm grateful for that. I mean, it could throw rotten tomatoes. There are a couple of times when it went a bit wrong, and I wasn't very popular.
Well, we forget about those moments, don't we? Isn't that the natural thing to do? I think you're probably the best. Although I'm looking behind you, there's like lots of photographs, and there's your dad there. I see. I used to have a poster of your dad and Jim Clark on my bedroom wall when I was a kid. What did you have? Who did you have on your wall? Let me guess. Mark Bolan?
No, you see, Mark Bolan, I took a look at Mark Bolan and I have to say, I thought, why is he wearing makeup? And it was a bit, I was a bit freaked out by that.
What do you thought was a bit girly?
Well, it was a bit girly, you know, and I like the music, but I kind of went for the more sort of well-established machismo types.
Like Black Sabbath?
Yeah, Led Zeppelin and people who there was no doubt about their identity.
I think there's room for everyone, you know. I actually remember going to school with bits of glitter on my cheek, like Mark Bolan. Me and my friend walked to school and said, let's get a group together, we're going to call ourselves the Boys. You know, because that was a bit, you know, it was kind of machismo and glam.
Yes. And what happened? Did the boys get
together? No, nothing ever happened of it.
You know, we
were told to take the glitter off our cheeks by our parents and never speak of the matter again.
But actually, Jim's got a point there. I mean, when he's talking about who you know you are, who's on your wall, sort of thing, or certainly at that age. So, who did you have as a poster of on your wall?
Well, I kind of because I think racing drivers were around me when I was growing up. I was, and my dad was one. I didn't think of them as anything exceptional. You know, they were my dad's mate. So Jim Clark was my dad's mate. It was obviously quite serious because I remember when he got killed. So I knew that it was quite a serious life that my dad led. But once I was about 11 years old, I discovered motorbikes. And then I discovered that there were these things called motorcycle racers. And so I pretty quickly had pictures of guys who motocrossed. I particularly like the pictures of guys motocrossing in California because in the English guys, they kind of went round on motorbikes that got buried in mud and stuff. But the Californian guys, they all looked pretty smart and they were drifting their bikes in the dirt and the dust and stuff. And then I followed people like, you know, Barry Sheen and Giacomo Agostini.
I rode on Barry Sheen's bike because I did a documentary about him, and it was insured for 15 million. And I think I was insured for less than a million. So,
what's the most valuable thing here in order of insurance? You're the bottom of the list.
Yeah, I was much less.
You're quantified in medical treatment, though, aren't you? You're not kind of quantified in resale value.
No.
Yeah.
I tell you what. Now we're on motorcycles and motorcycling heroes. I beat Kevin Schwantz in a race once. Do you believe that?
No.
Well, I'm telling you, it's absolutely true. Let me say this, though. It wasn't on motorcycles. It was on milk floats around a small circuit at Donington.
This is one of the early electric vehicles, then?
The milk float, yeah.
And you like a light commercial. So
I do. I love a light commercial and a milk float. Yeah, you don't see them. They're not around anymore, are they?
No.
I hear a man coming around. He comes around delivering milk in a BMW and he gets it out of his boot. He comes past our house at about 4 a.m. But, you know, the rattle of a milk float is a great thing.
Mm, the wine.
A bit confusing. Why are they called a float?
Because they gently float through the streets silently.
Yes.
Like a whisper.
And you can make a kind of a kind of root beer float or something, kind of using ice cream.
But so when you so David, going back to your motor, so you're looking at the motorcycles or the American motorcyclists, and because also they do always make it look a bit more glamorous, you know, they're sort of doing all the motocross, and then there's a picture of them, and they're all smoking a fag and sort of got sort of draped with sort of Marilyn Monroe and everything afterwards, you know. Whereas over here, you've got Jeff Duke having a mug of tin tea at the end of the whole sort of thing, you know, completely different story. But so did you get into what was your first motorcycle you had then?
Well, I begged and begged my dad to get me one of these little mini bikes because I thought I was not big enough for a big bike. So there was this, it just shows the power of advertising. When you're 10 years old, you see a photograph of a child-sized motorbike. And I wanted a bike, and that was the one for me. And my dad, very, bless him, he actually got me one for passing my 11 plus, which I didn't even know I took it. I mean, I had no idea.
You didn't know you'd done your 11 plus. So what, you got an 11-year-old's bike, 12-year-old?
Yeah, it was called a Honda Mini Trail, which I had until very recently, and then it disappeared from my garage somehow, and I don't know where it's gone.
So how did you make the jump from this 12-year-old's, the 11-plus and the 11-plus bike that your dad's given you? Then, you know, like racing bikes is quite a different thing. You know, if people have never tried racing, I mean, it's absolutely terrifying, in fact. You've got to, like, everything speeds up beyond what you think is fast, and to be a not very good racing driver, it takes enormous skills and courage. But to be a really great one is a completely different jump again. But how did you make the jump from having an 11 plus bicycle to a motorcycle to then like actually racing the things?
Well, my my dad can be partly to blame because he did motocross when he was younger. And so after I got this little bike, he got some bigger bikes, trials bikes actually, Bultacos. And so we used to ride around the garden in those. And then sadly he died when I was 15, and I was kind of, I was let loose on the world, and I got a moped. And my ambitions sort of grew from there. I got a Puch Grand Prix, which had magnesium wheels, which is...
Very good. I like the Puch, which was the sort of watchword for sort of moped, and coupled with the word Grand Prix. It's a nice sort of bike.
Is there such a thing? Is there a Puch Grand Prix?
It was called a Grand Prix, the model of the bike. So other people had the Suzukis and the FS1Es, and I thought I'd be clever and get one with disc brakes and stuff. So I kind of had these ambitions that were kindled by that. And then as soon as I could, before I even left school, I went down to Brands Hatch and did their racing school and bike racing school. And... you know, I just went off down that road literally and decided to pursue racing bikes.
But that must be, if you must have stood out at the school because, you know, like, because the racing lessons, you've turned up, like everybody turns up, but you must have kind of been quite a sort of fast then.
They gave me some award, but when because my dad was famous, I always assumed that anything that anyone showed any attention to me, it's because my dad was famous or something. So I never really kind of took what they were offering. Maybe they meant it sincerely, but they did give me some award, but they got some PR as well because I'd won it and won some award. And I kind of had this in the back of my mind that I've got to somehow shake this stigma off and actually, you know, show that I can really do it and really warrant some recognition, you know, rather than it just be simply because I'm the son of a famous person. So I kind of battled against myself quite a bit in early days in sport.
What did your dad drive when he wasn't on the track?
He was, like almost most racing drivers, don't drive
flashy cars. So what did he have? Did he have a light commercial?
He had a Ford Granada. Light commercial.
A Granada? Brown?
He had some sort of link with Ford for a long while. So we had a string of Fords. We had a Ford Zephyr, Ford Zodiac, Ford Consul, and that. Yeah, so Ford Granada.
Cool. My dad had a Granada. And my dad actually also had sort of whiskers, and it was very nice. This sort of, you know, 19, yeah, that sort of style. And
it was the one in the Sweeney. It was one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's what my dad. Very good with a vinyl roof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it would have been the GXL with all the options then.
All the options.
With the new thing, which was plastic seats.
Yeah.
Was it plastic inside? Fully plastic. Yeah.
Yeah, plastic. Nice. Isn't it?
Nice. Did he have a cassette or an 8-track?
No, a cassette, I think. Yeah.
Do you remember what you had on it?
We had Elton John.
Was that your dad? What, your dad's favourite was Elton John?
I don't know if it was his favourite. I think my dad had kind of curious musical taste. I think he liked music hall songs.
Did he? Oh, nice. Oh, well, that's good. No, that's great, isn't it?
So, now, who did he? What music hall ones did he like? Can you remember?
Well, it was just, he used to love singing that song, which is actually from Pinocchio, isn't it? Hi Diddly D, An Actor's Life for Me. He used to always sing that.
What, as he was driving around in his Granada. Hi Diddly D, An Actor's Life for Me.
That's such a great idea.
He wasn't much of a singer, but he knew how to whistle anyway.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For you as a... But not just a world champ, but as a professional driver, if you get in next to... So what is the etiquette? If you get in next to somebody who's like just sort of basically frightening the shit out of you and clearly doesn't know what they're doing, what do we do?
Wrestle a steering wheel off them.
Hit, yeah. You have start a fight in the car and try and get into the footwell where the brake is and try and detach them from the controls.
Yes. Try and get the brake in your teeth. And
the key, you can't pull the key out anymore. You know, you used to be able to switch it off or something. But
don't pull the key out and throw it out the window. Mm.
Yeah.
So and I love, very nice hearing about your dad's Granada. What's the first car that you can remember your dad having? I mean, I suppose what I really mean is, what's the first time you remember noticing cars and thinking, hey, that's you know, sort of recognising as a thing of interest.
Well, I have to disappoint you here, Jules. I've never really been that knowledgeable about cars. The cars he had, I think the Jag was quite interesting because it made nice noise. I think it was a Mark II Jag. He didn't have the flash cars. Oh, I'll tell you one thing he had was a Lotus Elan, one of the very early Lotus Elan Plus 2s. He had a silver one because he raced for Lotus. So that was quite fun.
I suppose you got them all free. Do you get free? What's the best free stuff you've ever got, Damon?
Yeah, you can have a lot of free stuff, but there's always a price, I've found. There's somewhere you have to pay for it.
You know, that Tony Pitts told us, what we'd like to hear about your free car, but Tony Pitts, the actor, he was in Emmerdale Farm, and he persuaded a local Seat dealer, who was a friend of his uncle's, that if he put him in a Seat car, and he was only very young, it would be great publicity for Seat and the dealership. So anyway, eventually he said he couldn't believe it, but they agreed. So he got to a dealership, and there was the sort of the very base model Seat with no extras, like no heater, probably no radio, nothing. And written on the side, what did he have written on the side of the door?
I am Tony Pitts.
No, it's just, yeah, a Seat supplied for Tony Pitts of Emmerdale Farm by so-and-so dealer on the side of the... So that was, yeah, there's no free lunch.
So I'd like that. I would have that on the side of my car, sponsored by Refreshers or something like that.
Have you had any of those, Damon?
You could pull that off, Vic, because I've had that, you know, car, someone's car dealership splashed down the side of your car, and it's kind of embarrassing because you do stick out a little bit. So you tend to.
You had your name on the side of a car
when I raced. I did, yeah.
No, not around the, not when you down your high street, pulling up outside Radio Rentals in a car that says "I am Damon Hill" on the side of it.
The world champion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, world champion Damon Hill drives a Renault Figaro.
I can confess this one. I will confess this one. And I don't know what it says about me, but I hope it comes out right. But I did have to go to one of those speed workshops once. And the very nice people who do the speed workshops explained...
Speed awareness,
that's it. Yeah, speed awareness course. So you're all naughty and we all sit in the room, and we have explained to us the error of our ways and thinking. And I'm 100% in support of what they're doing. But we were told, obviously, we don't want... Some people here might not want anyone else to know that they've broken the law and are in trouble. So we're going to put name tags, but you can put whatever name you like on the thing, and we'll just call you that name, OK? So I couldn't help it. I put The Champ, which was probably a bit cheeky. Probably not the right... I shouldn't have done it.
Did anyone
but
comment?
I think they knew who I was anyway, because everyone was looking at me, so I thought...
But I went on one of those, and it was like an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, because you had to stand up and say your name and how many miles a year you did and what sort of car you had and everything, and it was
embarrassing. How many miles an hour you went?
Yeah, yeah. But actually, you convicted for? What was your crime?
You can't ask me that. That's it. You know that you can't ask people what they were in for.
I mean, were you doing sort of 190 in a 20-mile-an-hour limit, or was it just sort of 75 in a 70-mile-an-hour limit?
There was a camera slowing down going into a village, but I just was going a bit too fast. And there was another one. There was another one that I got done about 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of nowhere, which I felt was a little bit hard, you know, bit hard cheese, but you know, you're supposed to stick to the rules, so
yeah, you're a recidivist. But there was our funny enough, when we were touring, we got these rental cars, and then in the office we got sent a thing through saying that one of the cars had been sort of you know, busted for speeding, and we want to know who it is. So we thought, oh, so we're looking up the first of all, I thought, well, let's look what day it is. And I looked and checked in my diary, and it was like an incredibly foggy day, and we were going across from like somewhere like Aberdeen to Glasgow or something like that. We had to go through this foggy, and I just remember it. And so I thought, so anyway, we worked out who was driving the car, and I said to them, I said, but I've just looked in my diary. It said you were clocked at doing 90 miles an hour, but it was like one of the foggiest days of the year. I said, how? What were you doing that speed in the fog? He said, well, I couldn't see the speedo because of all the fog.
Do you know, one of the first incidents I ever remember in a car was my dad had a Bond mini car because he, I think, what the
three wheeler,
the three wheeler, yes. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Orange. The Bond bug,
orange.
No, it was not before the bug. It was a Bond mini car, and it had a little Villiers engine in the front. And if you wanted to reverse, you had to open the bonnet and turn the engine round. And but he
Yeah, I don't believe that.
No, it's true. And he was a road racer on motorcycles, and I don't think he ever passed a driving test. So he was allowed to drive a Bond mini car, and we had a terrible crash in fog on our way to Scarborough. I remember. I must have been about five. But I remember that, and that was the end of that. But I remember that you had to open the bonnet and turn the engine around to put it in reverse.
Yeah, it's not very. It's not
that is very eccentric. That's very British, isn't it? Heath Robinson.
I've heard you also have to do that in Rolls Royces.
Not anymore. Do you think, you know, people said to me, oh, are you from a musical family? I remember being interviewed on the television once. I said, no, not really. Later that day, this was years ago, later that day, my grandmother was still alive. She said, I saw you saying that. She said, I played the piano. Your mother played the piano. Both my sisters played the piano. Your other grandmother. Of course you're from. I thought, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought. Thanks very much.
But I'm better than all of them.
So it didn't seem they were worth mentioning. So do you think, you know, like obviously your father drove. Did you have any other relatives that were sort of...
Well, my granddad, my dad's dad, never drove a car in his life. So it's a curious thing, you know, where does the talent come from? Mario Andretti was asked, you know, whether he believed in natural racing drives. And he said, well, he'd never seen a baby born holding a steering wheel. You know, it's not... How do you determine it's natural? It's not it's a relatively new thing. Where were racing drivers before they invented the car? What did they do?
That's right. How many medieval racing drivers can you name?
Not one at the moment. I like the story. You know, Stirling Moss, when he used to race, but had a champagne bottle on the passenger seat as he was in the Grand Prix.
Le Mans.
Who what?
They did that at Le Mans. In Le Mans, they did do that.
Yeah, they'd have Barry Sheen had a hole drilled in his helmet so he could have a fag on the grid. Imagine that nowadays.
Yeah.
You'd be driving around doing the Grand Prix smoking a fag and drinking out of a can of lager.
Well, I mean, I sold quite a few cigarettes, so shame on me, but it was all the rage in those days.
What, Rothmans on the side of your...
And other brands are also available.
Yeah. Did you? Now, the advertising that you get on your car, what was it? It's usually fags and drink, isn't it? You wouldn't have Persil on or something. You know, did you have Persil on there? Would you get that?
One of the ones, you'll like this one. One of the races I had, I won in Japan, and I got sponsorship, and they had the front of my arm, my forearm. And it was a penis enlargement clinic in Japan. So, and I won the race.
So I was basically picked.
It was like, I'm on the podium. They're going, can you hold your arm up a bit higher? You know, sort of. So we've had some strange sponsors. I mean, we could have had all the Blue Nun we wanted at one stage.
But no one wanted it.
No one wanted it.
Yeah, but, do you remember when you were on Shooting Stars? No, you were on back while you were on Shooting Star. Do you remember when you were on Shooting and we buried you under a sea of mushrooms?
That was fantastic. It was a bit cruel.
It was cruel, yeah, very cruel. We gave you a tube. You lay down on the bed of mushrooms. Then we covered you completely in mushrooms, and you had to throw crisp bags out from the bar just by feeling them. And then we all turned the lights out and went. The whole studio left.
Well, I mean, it was quite... Have you ever been buried in mushrooms, Vic?
No, but you know, I was quite envious of seeing you being buried in mushrooms.
Were they live mushrooms?
Well, they were real mushrooms, I was thinking that must have cost quite a bit. Mm. What a massive waste of money. They were all used later on. Damon Hill-flavoured mushrooms in the canteen at the BBC from that week on. What's the worst car you've ever had? Have you ever had a crap car?
Too many to name.
Go on then. What's the worst car you've ever had?
Worst car I've ever had. Actually, I'll tell you what it was. It was a Ford Zephyr, from the Zodiac, the last Zodiacs they made, which was, and they were like an aircraft carrier front to them. But it was the underpowered Ford Zephyr that had a V4 engine in it. And this aircraft carrier, it was known as one of the worst cars ever made anyway. And we squeezed out a gig somewhere. And I said, well, why are we hiring a car? This is mad. My mate's just offered me this Ford, Zicky Dobson's just offered me this Ford Zephyr with the big thing for 25 quid. So let's buy that. Good idea, you know, instead of renting these cars. So we buy the Ford Zephyr. And we drive, and we've got a show in, like, maybe sort of up north, Lancaster University or something like that. We drive up there, and an hour from the gig, we're sort of just, there's just a bang, and then oil comes up the windscreen. We're sort of driving this thing. And that was the end of the engine. But we had to get to the gig, so the truck towed us. Well, we had maybe a Ford Transit van with the gear in it, towed us to the gig. We play to these students at sort of midnight or whatever, finish, then get back in the car. And we're then towed back to London in the car with no heating on a freezing cold night. And then by the time we've got back to London, it's a rush hour in the morning, and it's got to drop one person off in Catford, one in Blackheath, one in... Oh, no. And we're in the rush hour in a freezing cold, having been towed all night in this sort of car. And I think that was the worst car that I ever had. Yeah, Zephyr.
And was that a well-known bad car?
Was it the Zephyr? I'm trying to think what it was. The last series of the Zodiac, about 1969 sort of car.
That story, though, how much did that car cost you?
25 quid.
25 quid when we got it. Yeah.
25 quid. So why didn't you just buy another car where you were? For 25 quid.
Well, that's we would have done if we'd have seen one. But no, we sort of learned our lesson by then about buying cars. Never buy another car again if this is what it's going to be like.
The Beetle died a death. I went with my then girlfriend, but eventually my wife, Georgie, to see her mum in Colchester, and the Beetle dropped a valve as I turned off the A11, and so I had to dump it by the side of the road. And I spent the weekend going through the local newspapers to buy a car to get back home. And I ended up buying a Cortina Mark III Cortina.
Oh, nice. And how was that?
That was all right, but it wasn't as charming as the Beetle. No. And I don't think I ever saw the Beetle again.
There's a charm to the Beetle. The worst car, it was a great car, but a bad car, was I had an Austin Somerset, and it was forever breaking down, and it cost me £1,000 to buy, and after I'd spent £3,000 on it and it still wasn't working, I thought it's doomed. And Omnibus were making a documentary about Bob and me, and they wanted something to do, and I said, well, I'm going to bury that car. So I got a digger and dug a hole in the field outside my house, which was now Paul O'Grady's house, but in that field out the back, I dug a hole and put the Austin Somerset in it and filled it in. So I buried the car.
It's like an artwork.
Have you ever been back to visit it?
No, apparently Paul O'Grady, who bought the house off me, has completely covered it, because it was a kind of, people would be crossing the field. It was a big field. People had come there to have a look at it, and he got sick of that, so he covered it in. So it's now detectable only by radar or
advanced search and heat equipment, but also presumably if you try to now plant a magical wood above there, nothing will grow there, and in years to come there'll be other legends why nothing will grow in this place and the birds won't sing.
Yeah.
But actually it's just because you've buried a Austin Somerset underneath.
Yeah. Jules, what do you and your ruthless gang of Teds dine on?
Tynebrand mixed grill. Yeah, out of interest, what are any other, because it is it's a tribute to transport, our show. Is your, what, you know, motoring's, but you're a professional, world champ and all that. But if you were using other methods of transport, boats, trains, planes, what other, bicycles, what other sort of things do you like?
I must have done most things, but I've had a go with this jet flying, you know, this flying man who's got this jet pack thing.
You've tried one of those?
A jet pack?
Yeah, he's got one goes on your back.
Yes.
And it's got a jet engine. And then you've got two on your arm, two jets on each arm. And you kind of control yourself.
But have you tried it?
I have tried it, yeah.
Wow. Do you know anybody else ever?
No.
I've never met anybody who's actually like tried a jetpack.
And I don't know if I can say I'm jealous, because I'd be terrified. You know, how high do you get?
About 6 inches.
Well, that's all, I'm no, all right
but,
with that.
But hang on a second. You're still in British airspace. Doesn't matter if it's 6 inches or 6,000 feet. Once you left the ground, that's it. Did you
really?
Have a license?
You have to have a license. I didn't have a license, no. But I was suspended. There was a cable that connected me just in case it went out of control.
Oh, so you were on a Kirby wire?
Yeah. So are you sure it wasn't just the Kirby wire that was lifting you up? And then he said, "Yeah, look, you can buy the jetpack. It's 50,000."
This story's really starting to sound very dodgy now. Yeah. You were in a circus on a Kirby wire, weren't you? And someone had put a shoebox on your back and said it was a jetpack.
It's not entirely clear that I was really flying.
Where did you try? I have to say, you're the first person we've had on that's done a jetpack. That really is impressive. Where did you go?
I think I probably had my time jet flying. I mean, it is a wonderful. It's really fantastic once it starts to lift you off the ground, but it's terrifying because you have got, like I said, on each arm you've got these massive creme brulee burners. You know, and if you're not careful, you can point them at your leg or something. Yeah. They're terrifying.
I saw a documentary about this recently, and the fellow who designed it, the heat that came out of the back of the packs had heated up the ground, and he couldn't actually stand on the ground because it was
couldn't
so
land,
hot.
Because it was too hot. But the other thing, what somebody came up with some years ago, which was unfortunately never fully developed, because I would have bought one of these. It was about 20 years ago, and it was a fellow that had worked out how you got little airships, like miniature, like almost like a barrage balloon, attached to, but like the size of a room or the size of a garage, a single lock-up garage, that sort of a size, that would have supported you, and it had a bicycle type of contraption on the attached to the bottom of it, and then a propeller at the back. All very lightweight, and then you pedalled the bicycle. You sort of so it would basically you flew along, pedalling yourself along with this propeller, and then this bicycle, and you just pedal around on these things. And I would have bought one of those, but that again, you were going to be in once you entered British airspace, once you left the ground, so there was a whole licensing issue that went on with them.
Does that include hovercrafts?
What you say?
Well, you've kind of left the ground on a hovercraft, aren't you? So is it a land or an air based vehicle? The hovercraft. There's something to think about.
Yes.
Nobody's going to, though. Nobody's going to think about that.
You might be right. I think maybe, technically, I think you are right that it's left the ground and it's in air, but it's not going to go very high. I mean, this guy who flies a jetpack, he gets, you know, gets a good 20, 30 feet up and just flies through the trees and stuff.
Last question would be, it's out of interest, you know, you've driven the fastest cars in the world. Have you got, is there a dream car
What's
left?
The slowest car
one. What's the slowest car you've ever driven, apart from the Volkswagen? Have you got a dream car left? That's what I want to know.
Alan Partridge. That's an Alan Partridge joke, that one. Because he interviews the French, France's second best racing driver. Do you remember that? Do you remember that sketch he did? And he says, that was a question, what's the fastest car ever driven? What's the slowest car ever driven?
Oh, is it? It's been done. Oh, well, I've raised that
yeah,
then.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, and I thought I was being unique anyway, once again.
Sorry, Steve Coogan beat you to that one.
But what's any dream cars left that you'd like to sort of get to put in that garage there?
Yeah, I've been looking. It's a difficult thing. They haven't quite made the car yet, have they? They're kind of, we're in this middle area where the range thing isn't quite there, but and also there's the carbon footprint of the new car, so it's massive carbon footprint to buy a car. So I will go electric eventually. I think we're all going to go that way, aren't we? So
yeah, but what I meant was there's nothing like, oh, you always dreamed of having, you know, a sort of a 1930s Mercedes racing car or an Austin A35 pickup truck or something like that. You know, something you've always wanted to have. You might never get it, but just something you've always dreamed of.
I have always kind of liked the Americana. I like the sort of Dodge Chargers and stuff. I wouldn't mind, you know, something that's a stylish car of its era, but, you know, it's bound to be a gas guzzler, isn't it? But, you know, if you don't drive it all the time, I'm sure it'd be fine. But Dodge Charger or something like that. Or
well, you can get one of them. If you shout loud enough, you might get one with the bit knocked off.
Which bit?
Anyway.
Well, I hope I've managed to answer all your questions correctly.
Correctly, yes.
Completed our survey.
Yes, thank you.
Great success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there goes Damon Hill, the world champion motor racer, going off on his jetpack and travelling all the way home at 6 inches above ground.
He's a marvellous fellow, Damon, and I wouldn't have a word said against him, but do you think it was true that what he was saying about the jetpack?
No, I think he's been conned. I think someone has put him on a Kirby wire and said there's a jetpack.
And so we've got to save him. I don't want him scammed like that.
Someone's trying to sell him a jetpack, aren't they? Whereas really what it is a shoebox with a couple of toilet rolls off the
and then somebody else wires you up when you're not looking. I think the thing, what we've got to just warn some of the listeners to this, if you get a cold calling or somebody at your door saying, do you want a jetpack?
Yeah.
Make sure they're an authorised agent.
And it'll be very like that hovercraft that you bought that turned out to be a wheelbarrow.
Have you got a motoring related song there?
I most certainly have. My old mane says follow the vein and don't dilly-dally upon the way. Oft went the vein with me own pegs in it. I will be on with me old cook linnet, but I dillied and dillied, dillied and dillied. Lost me way and don't know where to look. And you can't trust a special like an old time cook when you can't find your way home. Ta-da!
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.